Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
I could not have picked a better day for a gardening show, I'm telling you, and I hope you're out in the garden listening right now. Because we have a lot of information coming your way today. Don't forget, as Gooseberry said, this is a live call-in program. If you're listening in the afternoon, if you're listening in the evening, you cannot call in because the program has been pre-recorded. This afternoon, our call-in number, 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or if you're outside, our toll-free 1-888-353-5752. And if my feeble mind can remember to check, you can email me during the show at communityforum@kska.org. I want to introduce my guest today. Fran Derner is here from the Daily News. Many of you have probably seen her photographs for many years and did not know, as I didn't know until recently, that you're an avid gardener.
That's right, I am. And I've been writing a garden blog at the Daily News for about a year and a half now.
See, that's how badly out of it I am. I'm so, you know, immersed in the news side of it. I don't pay attention to the more fun and energizing side of it. You and I were just talking a few minutes ago before we came on the show that, you know, what a great thing gardening is, not just for, you know, your mental well-being, but also it's a good way to get exercise if you, you know, can't get out or if
you
have...
Yeah, it's terrific because it really does exercise every part of your body. You get out there and you're stretching. I mean, you're walking constantly when you're carrying bags of dirt and compost and rocks. You're actually getting a, you know, a weight training. I mean, it's wonderful when you come, when the winter comes around, you'll have to find something else to do. But during the summer, you're really getting a great workout.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've realized, you know, in doing gardening as my, I don't know if you call it skills, but as the things I do have increased, you can become quite talented at stealing things like rocks or, you know, things that you think, oh, that would be great to plant some flowers in. People use old boots.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know? Well, one of my favorite things to do is to walk on the beach and pick up pebbles and rocks. And my whole garden is full of lots of little rocks and different, you know, there's always some fun looking thing you have to pick up and put in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I know there's always building going on somewhere in Anchorage. So this summer, my grandkids and I went and raided this huge dirt pile that had rocks in it. People were kind of eyeballing us, but I just kept right on going, thinking if they're going to call the cops over rocks,
right? I know. Gardeners are, they're pretty wily that way, I think, too. You know, always finding something to scramble and put in the back of their car. You know, pulling over to the side of the road with a screech, and you think, what's that? And, you know, and there's a piece of wood out there, but it's got a perfect shape or, you know, look to it, or a piece of scrap metal. You know, one of my neighbors, that was actually, I think, on her first date with her husband, they found a great big piece of scrap metal that he had to put in the back of his pickup truck and all back for her garden. But it must have been true love.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, raises the interest level in like going to the dump for a date or something. Anyway, we're coming on fall. The leaves are turning.
Yeah. What a great day today too. Boy, it's beautiful.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to keep raining, but I saw a big hole in the clouds come over the mountains. What are people doing nowadays in their gardens? What's kind of the season?
Well, they're really trying to extend it as long as possible. I mean, it's really hard to think that probably in another month or so we're going to have some snow on the ground. I know myself, I've been very reluctant to cut things down and put things to bed. So I've been doing it a little bit at a time. Mostly I'm pulling some of the annuals out that don't look very good right now. But I still have a hanging basket, and I still have some containers full of flowers, and I still have cabbage and peas growing, and you know, some of the late blooming perennials are still going. So there's kind of two minds to putting a garden to bed in the winter. Some people will cut everything down. And I think there's a trend more and more towards not cutting things down, just letting them kind of naturally decompose where they are and mm-hmm. letting them stay. And there's a thought that that actually provides some protective mulch over the plants as well. So you do all your cleanup in the spring instead of doing it in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Which I actually started doing. Of course, Jeff Lowenfels has been in here many times mm-hmm. and talked about mm-hmm. you know, doing organic mm-hmm. and getting mm-hmm. away from chemicals.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I've learned that, well, last year was the first time I really had a good bleeding heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a wild rose bush. So mm-hmm. last year when I was wrapping up, I just, you know, covered everything up, didn't pull anything, and left as much on the ground as I could, and they came back beautifully.
Yeah, I guess the only thing you would have to watch out for is if there was any ice in over the plants, and there's always the chance that it could possibly smother it in some way. So if you just keep an eye on that, you should be fine.
Yeah. So I went to your blog, which is at adn.com. You can see you're there in the list of blogs.
Right, and you can also directly type it in. It'd be adn.com/talkdirt. The name of the blog is Talk Dirt to Me.
And that's what we're going to do today. We encourage all of you who are interested and have questions about your gardening right now, give us a call. My guest today is Fran Derner, 550-8433. That's 550-8433 is our local number, and the toll-free 1-888-353-5752. Gardening, as a photographer, gardening must have, are you interested in taking pictures of what you grow? I mean, is that a part of?
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's just about every day. And when I get home from work in the evening, I'll take a little walk around. That's a good way to decompress. And I'll look and see if there's anything that looks particularly pretty and the way the light is. And I always have my camera. And of course, on the blog, just about all the photos that are there are photos that I've taken either in my garden or out around in the mm-hmm. different travels and the different gardens that I've visited. And yeah.
I didn't even realize until a couple of years ago when my friend Lori told me about it, that there is a rose garden in the Park Strip.
Oh, there is. And the Rose Society has been doing a wonderful job with renovating that garden right now. They've been building up beds and planting new roses and redesigning everything. And they have done just a wonderful job. I'm not sure if they're done with it. I know they started work last year and they were continuing this mm-hmm. summer. And I walk through there pretty much about at least once a week or so. And it looks like it's just about done. I'm not sure if they have any more plans. But, you know, there are still some roses blooming as well. And,
yeah.
As with any plants, there are some things that bloom early and sort of midsummer and then late summer as well. So there are still things out there that are blooming.
If you start something from seed a little bit late in the spring, does that mean you can have blooming plants in your garden late in the season, or is it too cold?
No, I think it depends on the plant. There are some things like perennials might have just one bloom period. If you're starting seeds for a perennial, you're never quite sure if you're going to get a bloom out of it. But annuals, that's sort of the beauty of annuals, is that they will bloom pretty much all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
And it might just take a little bit of maintenance, like deadheading the spent blossoms so that they will keep on blooming. But
mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of gardeners will mix up perennials and annuals. So you've always got something blooming out there.
Kristen, she's emailed in the question
I
had in my mind but didn't remember to write it down. There are some big leafy plants in the municipal beds on the Park Strip on L Street between 8th and 9th. Do you know what they are? They're huge.
What color are they? What
green?
Do they look like? Oh, I know what they are. I think they must be a Sonara, which is a variety. It's also very close cousin to artichokes.
Oh.
And you'll see if they, you know, if we have enough warm weather or enough of a season, you will see the thistle head coming up out of the top, and
mm-hmm.
people will look at it and think it's an artichoke. But I think that the gardeners have been growing this Sonara instead of artichoke because when they did grow artichokes, you would drive around and see that they would disappear occasionally. So, you know, yeah, it's like the cabbages that they grow, you know, when they start getting big enough, they start disappearing as well. So I think they switched to the cenaro, which is a close relative.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting because my husband and I were driving downtown the other night, and he says, good God, what are those? I mean, they're huge.
Yeah, they're huge. Wonderful. I mean, they're wonderful for structure, and just the look of them is just sort of, in a way, it's almost prehistoric, isn't it? With huge notched leaves, and they're very hairy as well. So, yeah, they're
hairy
fun.
Hairy is good.
You need a lot of space to grow something like that. I tried that a couple of years ago, and I don't have a huge garden, and as they were getting bigger, I thought, they're just taking over, so I ended up pulling them out.
Yeah. Okay, phone number 550-8433 for those gardening questions. My guest today, Fran Derner, and we're going to go to the phones right now to Juliana on line one. Welcome to the show.
Why, thank you very much for taking my call. Fran, I've got a question about my geraniums. I have a big pot of red and white mixed geraniums that I, you know, plants that I mixed, and they're blooming so beautifully. When the woman I bought them from said that I could bring them in the house and in the winter, and they would bloom like a potted plant inside my house. I do have a wonderful southern exposure, and my plants grow like crazy there. Can you do that?
Yes, you can. And if you have a good southern exposure window as well, they would be happy there. And they don't mind it if it's a little bit cool there either. So they should be able to grow inside. Let's see, in order to keep them happy, keep an eye on the soil. Probably don't let it dry out too much, although they can take a little bit of dryness. They may get a little bit leggy because as we get less and less sun, they'll start growing taller and taller, looking for the light. And they may stop blooming as well, and I wouldn't worry about that. And in the spring, maybe February or so, you could cut them back a bit and get some new growth going so that they'll be nice and bushy in the summer when you bring them out again. You might also keep an eye on them to make sure that you're not bringing any little critters inside like aphids or things like that. And
that's one of the things I was going to ask you. Is there a spray or something for bringing, you know, I've always read not to bring outside plants in. Is there a spray or something? I'd really like to keep these because they're gorgeous.
Yeah, well, you could try looking. If you see any aphids, you can try just smushing them with your fingers, or you can try holding the plant over a sink and spraying it with water. There's also it's pretty organic, insecticidal soap. It's a Safer brand, I think, and you can find it at different garden supply stores around town, which you can also spray on the leaves, and make sure you spray on the underside of the leaves. It's usually where you see the aphids.
Well, that's wonderful, and it's a patio door that I have, and I have a 7-foot tomato plant.
Oh, fabulous.
It's growing like crazy.
That's fabulous.
I bought it from my window, and it was 6 inches tall, and I left my window a long time ago. Thank you for your help.
Oh, you're welcome.
Ma'am?
My pleasure.
Ma'am? How long? Are you still there?
Pardon? I'm here.
How long have you had the tomato plant?
I bought it in about March from a local nursery when they were having them on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And it is still producing tomatoes.
Oh, you're so lucky.
There's 7 on there. Well, I'm telling you, I have a southern exposure with the patio door, and I have 34 windows. My house burned down. I built a new home, a little home, so that all the light is just... I have more light than I have a right to, really.
Wonderful. Well, that's great.
But that's why. And it's getting brown, the tomato plant.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It's probably ready to go to sleep here. But you can still enjoy those tomatoes. That's great.
Thank you very much for
Thank you. Juliana, thanks for your call. We're going to move on now. Don't forget, if you want to get in the conversation, Fran Derner is my guest today. We're talking gardening, 550-8433. Talk Dirt to Me is her blog at the ADN.com website. Line 4 and David, welcome to the show.
Hi. I've got a lot of wild raspberries on my back fence. I was wondering what I should do to those to overwinter them, and when do you cut out the old canes that have already produce fruit?
Well, you could start cutting out the old canes now if the fruit is pretty much gone. I would go ahead and start cutting them out now. In fact, that's probably something I need to do in the next week or so. And one of my winter chores is to cut out the old canes, and then I usually top the new ones. Some people wait until the spring to do it. I've always tried to get all that stuff done in the fall so I don't have to go back out in the spring. And also I try to tie up the newer canes as well, so they'll have a little bit of support through the winter.
Well, now when you say top, how much, what are you looking for in topping them back?
Well, I'm about 5'4", and I don't like them to be too much over my head, so I cut them down to, where I can kind of look at them.
Yeah. Okay. And do you fertilize them this time of year, or just?
I don't do a darn thing to mine, to be honest. I'll dump some leaves around them, and that's about it. And in the summer, I'll try and water them if there's not too much rain. But I really, it's kind of tough love with my raspberries, and they do okay.
Well, I guess I better get out there and cut them in between rainstorms.
Yeah, really, go out today. Today's a good day.
It's a great day. Take the rest of the day off, David. Okay, let's see here. Go on to line 5, and Lynn, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. My question is about lawns. You know how it rains all the time in the second half of summer here in Anchorage?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I grew up in the Midwest where it was absolutely forbidden to touch your grass with a lawnmower in the rain because it was so bad for the grass. But what in the world do you do here?
Well, you run home as soon as there's a break in the rain and you mow. I've been able to mow. I have a small lawn, but I've been able to mow in between rainstorms. I do notice that a lot of the lawn companies are out there. It doesn't matter what the weather is, but mm-hmm. I think they have some pretty good equipment.
I know. Hmm. I worry about sharpening the blades, keeping the blades sharp enough, because surely that's got to be the real problem with cutting it in the rain.
Yeah, I would think so. So it's a good idea to keep them sharpened if you can.
So basically, I just need to go for it.
Well, if you can't get out there when there is a break, then I you could go ahead and try it. The grass will tend to clump a little bit more, and may, I don't know what kind of a lawnmower you have.
I can't bag it at all when it's wet.
Yeah,
it just doesn't want to pick up, so I have to mulch it.
Yeah, and that's I stopped bagging my grass clippings years ago. I just let them lay on the lawn. In fact, I don't use any fertilizer on my grass at all. I might throw out a little bit of composted steer manure once a year, but mm-hmm. I just mow that grass right in there. And I'll tell you, my lawn is nice and healthy. It just seems to love it, and I have lots of worms. And
I have actually noticed that my lawn looks better since I stopped bagging.
Mm-hmm.
Since I stopped bagging the grass, the lawn is so much greener.
It is, because the grass will decompose, and it's really just nitrogen going back into the soil, mm-hmm. which feeds the grass. So it's a nice cycle. And as Jeff Lowenfels would say, you're also feeding the microbes. So it's a good thing.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, yeah, thanks for your call, Lynn. That is something that, I've had a lot of fun doing, too, is I just mulch my lawn all the time, what's left of it. I try to keep getting it smaller and smaller, but it's worked really well. I haven't had any of my neighbors say, geez, your lawn looks like really bad, mm-hmm, or whatever. Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. It's been fine.
Yeah, mine is nice and healthy. And I, my front yard, I have no grass. It's all garden beds. But I like having a little bit of lawn. I think it's a really restful thing for the eyes, actually. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I haven't used any chemicals at all in years, and it looks great. Looks great.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today we're talking gardening, our fall garden show. Give us a call if you'd like to join in. My guest today is Fran Derner. She has a gardening blog at the ADN.com website. It's called Talk Dirt to Me. And if you have questions or comments, give us a call. 550-8433 is our local number. Our toll-free is 1-888-353-5752. Don't forget, if you're listening in the evening, you cannot call in because the program has been pre-recorded. I wanted to just quickly get back to the raspberry thing. When you say cutting back the old canes, is that just like the dead? What does that mean?
Well, when I say the old canes, they'll be the canes that had fruit on them this year.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be able to tell because you'll see the wherever the fruit was along the branches there. And so you just go ahead and cut them down as low to the ground as you can get in there and cut them. And about this time, they're starting to look kind of brown and dry and dead
mm-hmm.
as well. I think there may still be some out there that have fruit on them, but it's pretty much winding down right now. So you want to get them out I'm not sure what you would call it, the bush, you know, mm-hmm, get those out there. So the new canes that will provide or that will grow fruit next year will be next year's crop. Those canes have room to grow and breathe and they're not competing with the old canes mm-hmm, anymore.
Mm-hmm. I noticed one thing. The problem that I had this year is with all of the rain, the trees have just been leafy and beautiful and growing, and it's darkened up my yard quite a bit this year. And my raspberry bush is in the back next to the fence, and it usually does really well, but this year it didn't. And I was a little bit concerned about that. It leafed out, mm-hmm, but I really didn't get any fruit this year.
Oh, wow. Well, I've heard other people say that as well, that their raspberries didn't do very well this year. And the raspberries that I have grow in a really weird place. They're right in between my house and my next-door neighbor, and it's on the north side of my house, and it's only 10 feet between my house and my neighbor. So it's not, it doesn't get a great amount of sun anyway, mm-hmm, but they've always done fine, and even this year they did well as well. And mm-hmm, I don't know why some do well and others do not. I think it probably has something to do with the variety,
mm-hmm,
but I don't know what mine is. It's been there since I bought the house. So
yeah, the bush that I have, I've had for several years, and mm-hmm, my daughter and I rescued it from where they mm-hmm were going to build a mm-hmm subdivision. So mm-hmm it was wild mm-hmm at the time, so I'm not sure what it is either.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I also wanted to ask you about strawberries. Mine, of course, have taken over a huge section of my lawn, and I've sort of kept them contained to one area. But, I don't know, with the weather, I haven't been able to get out there real regularly and pull the grass out of there and other stuff, so they're just pretty much a mess. Is there some way to keep them up off the ground, or, mine kind of get really huge berries on them?
Oh, that's great. Well, I actually took all my strawberries out for that very reason, because they were so invasive, and I really got tired of pulling out all the runners, and I didn't have a variety that had really big berries, although they were very, very tasty.
Mm-hmm.
But they were little berries, and they're just, it wasn't the kind that would keep going. It would have like one crop, and then that was it. So mine got pulled out. It's like I don't have a whole lot of patience mm-hmm for things that don't perform the way I want them
to
perform.
Well, they can become high maintenance.
Yeah, and there are people that will grow strawberries from hanging baskets or in planters, and that will keep them a little bit tidier and in check, and I suppose you could try that. There are different varieties that or cultivars of strawberries that do really well here, and I'm trying to see if I can find exactly what those are. I can't remember the name of them right now, but if I can think of it, I will let you know. Yeah, that's what I did. I mean, and that's the thing about gardening. If you don't like something, you can get rid of it and try something else or, forget about it.
You can usually find someone else who is willing to take it.
Oh, yeah, that too. I mean, sharing is a wonderful thing. We were talking about that a little bit before, trading plants or sharing with friends and neighbors that's one of the joys of gardening, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A few summers ago, a friend of mine, Meg, and I decided we wanted to try some strawberries, and some lady in the valley was giving some hardy strawberries away.
Wow, nice.
So we drove to, it seemed like Kansas, and, we just kept going and going and going. We finally got there, and she gave us a lot of strawberry clumps, and I'm telling you, she already had them growing
wow
for like a decade.
Uh-huh. Oh, huh.
So they're just really, really hardy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid that if I try to pull them out or kill them. They probably like try to beat me up or something. But, yeah,
well,
they've
I
been...
hope that doesn't happen. But you could, you know, you could try taking some plants out and planting them, putting them in a planter and see how they overwinter, if that works or if it doesn't work.
Would you have to bring them in? Probably.
No, I don't think so. No, because there's some strawberries that are really, really hardy.
Yeah.
And I think they'd be okay outside. You might have to, one thing you could do or think about doing if you had the space is if you had maybe a bed that you used as a vegetable bed that had nothing in it, you could try sinking your pot into that bed.
Oh, yeah.
And that could provide some extra winter protection mm-hmm. as well.
Okay, Lee has emailed us. He asks, how do you deal with remarkably tall, unruly delphinium? Mine have all day sun and the stakes don't hold them up. And also, I planted a new apple tree and heard you were supposed to cut the fruit early and not let it put energy into making fruit, rather growing up. Any truth to this?
I'll start with the delphiniums. Yeah, the delphiniums need to be staked, and you can either stake them or not, and they'll flop over. I think that there are some growers that are trying to develop delphiniums that don't need staking. But, you know, when it rains here like it does, just about when the delphiniums are flowering, and if you have a good head on the delphinium, it's going to flop over. There's just not much you can do about it. I don't grow fruit trees, so I don't really have much of an answer there. But there is the Alaska Pioneer Fruit Growers, and they have a very good website, and they do have a great membership and hold meetings. And if you wanted to join them, if you went to my blog, to the adn.com/talkdirt, on the right-hand side, I have garden clubs and associations, and those are links to most of the ones that I know about. And if there's one I don't know about, let me know, and I'll add it. But the Pioneer Fruit Growers, there is a link there that you can click on, and it will take you to their website, and you might be able to get information through them.
Also, I have some friends who planted little apple trees when their kids were born, 7 years ago, and they've never really provided any fruit or done very well. So if anybody has any hints about that, give us a call and let us know.
Well, that could also be due to pollination. You know, they're saying that we're not seeing the honeybees, the bees that we used to see. And, you know, in order to get fruit, you need the flowers need to be pollinated. So it could be something to do with that as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How important those bees are. Mm-hmm. I did see there's Gardening Alaskan Style 2008. And they do talk about delphinium. Let's see. They you can see stunning Alaska gardening photos. And as you explore the different parts of these English cottage-style gardens or catch up on the latest Alaska gardening news via our gardening blog, they also have another website that's dedicated just to English delphiniums. So you can get tips on growing delphiniums from seeds, taking cuttings, thinning, fertilizing, and staking. So, Lee, that might be of some help.
Yeah, and I do have a link to growing delphiniums in Alaska on the right-hand side of my blog as well. So you could find something
there. Tons of information on your blog.
Well, I hope so. And if there's anything that's missing, let me know, and I'll try and add it.
Earlier we were talking, and I was saying how much I love hydrangeas, but this is kind of an iffy climate for them, I think. What's your take on hydrangeas?
Well, they are finding there are some varieties that are hardy to our climate. And in Alaska, we go anywhere from a zone 2 to a zone 5. So it depends on where you are. And even in Anchorage, there are different zones in different parts of the city. And then even in your yard, there could be different microclimates as well. But I have seen hydrangeas grown here. And I think the variety that I've heard that does really well is one called PG. It's P-E-E-G-E-E. And that's the name of it. And there are two others that I can't think of at the moment. But I think... I have seen them for sale at Mill and Feed in the summer, and I'm sure the other greenhouses probably carry some of them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the best place to grow them would be closer to your house where it's warm, and they'll get some of the benefits of being, you know, the warmth from the foundation to help them make it through the winter. But there are some varieties that they're finding that are hardy to our climate and will make it through the winter. So
wonderful.
Yeah. Fun.
Yeah, I'd really like to try that. You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. It is a live call-in show if you're listening in the afternoon. And our local number, if you'd like to join in, we're talking gardening and our fall time chores in the old yard, 550-8433. If you'd like to speak to Fran Derner, she's our gardener today, 550-8433, or toll-free 1-888-353-5752, or you can email communityforum@ksKA.org. And if you're listening in the evening, you cannot call in because the program has been pre-recorded.
So there were two things I wanted to mention. Maybe this will be a good time. We're waiting for some other callers to come in. There is a plastic pot recycling that's going to happen this weekend, and it's a one day only. It happened last year for one day, and it's this year again, which is a really great event because as many gardeners have lots and lots of plastic pots that they hold on to thinking that they can use them again, and then suddenly you find you've got a shed full of them,
mm-hmm.
and you don't really want to throw them out into the landfill, but you can bring them if they have the numbers. If you look on the bottom and in that little sort of chasing arrow triangle there, if they have the numbers 2, 5, or 7 in them, clean them out really well, stack them up, and bring them to the Benny Benson School parking lot right across from the Alaska Botanical Garden. And there'll be volunteers from ALPAR and the Botanical Garden, and they will take your pots and collect them, and then they'll be sent down south for recycling into other plastic products. Maybe, you know, you've probably seen like Trex decking, things like that. I think they're made from recycled plastic pots and other plastic things. So this is a really, really great community event that if you're a gardener, or even if you're not and you have some of these pots hanging around, bring them out there. They won't take any of the other numbers. If you have anything else other than 2, 5, or 7, they won't take that. And they won't take those little cell packs, those non-rigid cell packs.
Oh, yeah.
They're not recyclable either, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe someday there will be a use for them. But this is a great thing to try and get to if you can.
Yeah. I always hate to throw them away. You know,
yeah, I do
like,
too. I know.
And I got really lucky because my neighbor, who is a, I don't know, could you say vociferous gardener?
Mm-hmm.
Or something. She says, do you have any extra pots? And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
So I managed to unload all of them.
Oh, good. That's great.
Cold climate gardening. Are there certain things that you do that you think enhance your garden that, you know, someone who lived in, say, maybe the Midwest or something wouldn't do?
I can't think of anything that I would do differently. I've never lived in the Midwest, and I don't really know what it's like to garden in a hot climate. But I think the big difference is that they can grow things that we can't grow, and we can grow things that they can't grow. You know, there are plants that really like a cool climate, and there are plants that really like it hot.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're very envious of each other.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that does so well up here are those blue poppies, the Himalayan blue poppies, and they love cool, misty weather, and they will not grow in hot areas. And so people that live in the Midwest or the East Coast or the South that have hot weather, they are so envious of us. But we can't grow some of these fabulous roses and, you know, some of the hydrangeas and, you know, things that they can really grow very well outside that we can't grow. And there's just nothing you can do about that. You just have to adapt.
Yeah. It's interesting when you travel to places that are hot, like Texas or somewhere else, where you see all these exotic trees with incredible flowers. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of out of this world.
Well, I guess you could build a heated greenhouse and then, you know, you could grow all sorts of exotics.
Oh, honey. Okay, Betty has emailed in, do you have a suggestion for getting rid of slugs? This year they seem like they are endless.
Well, my nemesis. For years, I went out into the garden every morning. I'd get up at really early and go out, and I would pick slugs. And I, my method was to take a plastic glass filled half full with salty water. And when that water, when the level rose to the top, then I was full. And I kept a count, and I would get, you know, a first year 1,400, second year, you know, 2,000.
Whoa.
Then, you know, a year ago, like 3,000 slugs in a summer, and that was just when I was counting. But by the end of the summer, I was so grossed out. This year, I have not gone out to pick a single one. I have used Sluggo, which is, you know, it's a bait, and it's safe to use in the garden. And I have tried beer. I found beer was not very effective for me. In fact, one time I went out and I had saucers of beer around the garden. And I went out and I would pick slugs and throw them into the beer. And when I came back to empty out all the saucers, they had all climbed out. It was just, you know, it was ridiculous. So
they were definitely Alaskan slugs.
Yeah, and I thought, well, they weren't. You know, they weren't drinking the beer. So I thought, but what a waste of beer. So I've never done that again. Now, I have heard other gardeners say that they have put out saucers of beer and stood there while they watched the slugs race to see how fast they could get there and drown themselves. So I don't know if it was the slugs I had or the type of beer, but the best way to get them really is to pick them or kill them. You could put out the Sluggo bait. Another good thing is in the spring and in the fall, if you can route around under rocks and under the base of plants where they lay their eggs, and their eggs look like little tiny little seed pearls or little pearls of tapioca. They're almost translucent and white. And if you can gather and get rid of as many of those eggs as you can find, then you're going to have a head start on next year as well.
Okay. We're skipping lunch now. Okay, call in if you have questions or comments, 550-8433. Do you have a slug secret? We can share it with everybody, 550-8433. Okay, here we have another email. People are getting ahead of me here. Shelley says, I have two trees. Sorry, I don't know the exact type that were planted by my landscaping company 3 summers ago. This year, both of them did not get any leaves at all, although they did get green buds. They just never bloomed. Are they dead?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. One thing to really check for when trees are planted is that they're not planted too deeply. And you can usually look at the base of them, and if there is a root flare, and that is where when the trunk of the tree comes down to the ground, but it flares out a little bit before it disappears under the earth. If you've got that root flare there, then they're probably planted okay. But if it just goes straight down into the ground with no root flare, it's probably planted too deeply, and it won't do very well. Now, you could dig them out again and try and plant them up a little bit, and just make sure they get a lot of water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She also says the trees are the ones that get the white flowers in the spring.
Probably maybe a crab apple, perhaps, or an apple tree, something like that. Another thing is that I think in some old thinking was that you could plant a tree with the root ball still surrounded by burlap, but that does not work. You've got to make sure that burlap is taken off of the root ball, and the roots are able to grow and spread in the ground. So it might be worth it to try and, you know, check out the root flare and see if you can dig down and see if there's any burlap sticking out somewhere. You definitely want to remove that, or any wire as well.
Is there any hope for tree limbs that have been cracked, you know, kids climbing in the tree and damaging it right as where it goes in the trunk?
Well, again, I'm not an arborist. You'd probably should get a certified arborist to come look at your tree and see if it's been damaged or if it will possibly heal itself. I couldn't say.
I have to look into that.
Yeah.
Someone's got some ideas, give us a call. Back to the phones now. Our number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. And David on line 2. Welcome to the show.
Hi there, Nellie and Fran, enjoying the program. I have a question. My Asiatic lilies, or actually half of them, they're in two separate clumps. One bunch looks like they're dying. The plants turned brown. They have nice large flower pods on them, buds. But that one bunch, all of which is, you know, probably in an area about 5 feet by 5 feet, all the leaves are brown. The plants are tall, but they just seem to have died as of about a month ago.
Oh, wow. And the buds are all dead as well, or does it look like it may still bloom?
I don't think they're going to bloom, and I have the very same kind on the other end of my garden, mm-hmm. and they seem to be fine. They haven't bloomed mm-hmm. out, mm-hmm. really, because the season has been so retarded this year. But
Yeah. Well, it's a couple of things. It's possible that they may have gotten way too wet. If the clump is really clumpy, I mean, if the bulbs are really growing together, if they could have rotted, perhaps, you could try digging them up. You know, lilies are actually one of the hardy things that you can dig up almost any time, and it won't really hurt them. So it's possible that the clump may have begun to rot, or it's possible that they may have gotten it's a botrytis, which lilies are a little bit prone to, and the best thing to do is make sure you gather up and get rid of all the dead leaves that have fallen down, and maybe take a little bit of the dirt out as well, because that stays in the dirt, in the soil, okay. and replace the soil maybe with some new soil, some compost or something like that. But you might try digging out the clump and see how the bulbs look. You could separate them. If it's a big clump, you could try separating the bulbs and planting them in some different places as well to see if they'll do better in a new place.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks.
Okay. Right. Here's your homework, David. You have to give those suggestions a try. And when we have our spring mm-hmm. gardening mm-hmm. show, we want to report.
Yeah,
from you.
Yeah, want to know how they did or what you found. Definitely.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. Thank you.
Okay. I wanted to go back quickly to your calendar this weekend, Friday, coming up. Doug Trick will be leading tours mm-hmm. of his garden mm-hmm. as he does every week.
Yeah, and he will be doing it through September. And his theme this week, and it's at 6 o'clock, is fall foliage plants, the early colors. Now he does have a limited group that he can take through his garden, because his garden is and nursery is not that large. So you do need to call for a reservation, and his number is 345-2507, and he's accepting donations for the food bank as well. So that's a really nice thing. There's no charge for the tour, but if you have a donation, you can of some non-perishable food items you could bring for the food bank. That would be a lovely thing to do. And you could ask him lots and lots of questions, because he is just a great, knowledgeable guy.
Is that D'Armon?
Rabbit Creek. Yeah, about a mile up Rabbit Creek on the left.
Yeah. I've seen it, but I've never mm-hmm. gone in there. I need to get up there.
Oh, sometime. It's wonderful.
Yeah. There's some interesting greenhouses up tucked around on the hillside. Mm-hmm. Places you don't expect. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to go back to the phones now. Give us a call if you have questions, 550-8433. And here's Ken. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have about 20-year-old bristlecone pine and several lodgepole pines that aren't quite as old that have these little white dots near the base of where the needles go down to the branches. And I've noticed on the bristlecone pine, it's starting to apparently kill the needles that are turning reddish, and it's the same similar occurrence is happening with the lodgepole pines. And I assume they're aphids. I don't know for sure. And if do you know what treatment I would use to hopefully get rid of those?
Well, you know, the first thing you should do is to really identify what the problem is. And you could take a piece of, if you can cut a small piece of your branch off and bring it into the Cooperative Extension Service, which, by the way, is a wonderful resource for just about everything. And they are located near the corner of Lake Otis and Northern Lights Boulevard in the building where Charter North College is. They're on the ground floor there. But if you can bring a piece of that in there, their horticulturist or their integrated pest management people can look at it. They can look at it under a microscope, or they can take samples and send it in to some other bug person or you know, some other scientist somewhere who could look at it, and they can give you an answer as to what it is. And then once you know what it is, then you can treat it or find out what the treatments are for that sort of thing. Yeah, I mean, the Cooperative Extension Service is really a wonderful resource for everything. And they also, in their entryway there, they have stacks and stacks of really good brochures and information about everything, just about everything. And then the other thing that you could possibly do if you're really into trees is there's a group called Tree-rific, and they meet occasionally through the year. But they have a meeting coming up next Wednesday, the 24th, at the Anchorage Senior Center, and they meet at 6 o'clock and talk about different topics, and a lot of certified arborists and just people interested in trees are at that meeting. So that's a really good place to go and talk about trees.
Oh, okay. Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
And I did want to talk a little more about cooperative extension. I'm glad you brought that up. And the Master Gardener program.
Oh, yeah. Great, great program. I finally had the time to take that course last year, and it's just an amazing thing. And it's coming up again in October. The dates are October 15th through December 5th, and they meet twice a week on Wednesdays and Fridays from 12 to 3. It's about 40 hours of training. You then provide 40 hours of volunteer service. There's still some room in the class. Last year we had an overflow class. It was like 55 people, and it was just a fantastic course. Their number at the Cooperative Extension Service is 786-6300. Call to register for that class. It's $100, but you get so much information to take home. I had a four-inch big three-ring binder that was overflowing with information. It's a fabulous course. I would recommend it for anybody and everyone.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, you were saying they also have a bunch of brochures at their office. And
yes, they do.
I know in rural Alaska, they do a lot of stuff. Like they have all kinds of information on canning and, you know, preserving foods.
Yeah, they do. And in fact, they also have some, I think they've got a class on canning fish and meat coming up that's on September 25th. In the evening. And again, call that same number, 786-6300, for information on that. They also have a website as well. I'm sorry I don't have their website, but if you go to my blog on the right-hand side, I have a link to the Cooperative Extension Service website there where there's lots of information as well.
Yeah, just go to her blog and you'll get a lot of resources you did not expect. You're listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today we're talking gardening, and my guest is Fran Derner. She is a gardener, and she has a garden blog at adn.com. And, of course, many of you know she has been a photographer there for many years. 550-8433 is our local number. Our toll-free is 1-888-353-5752, or you can email at communityforum@ksKA.org. We're running out of time here, so if you want to get those calls in, you need to do it pretty quickly. Are there certain situations where you might cover your plants with anything like burlap or something over winter? Or?
Well, I have a rhododendron that I have been protecting. Rhododendrons actually grow in Anchorage fairly well. They grow really well in southeast, but they tend to dry out a little bit. So I have been surrounding mine with burlap every year to try and protect it. And that also will protect it a little bit from the moose as well, because they actually think it's pretty tasty.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might cover some of their rose bushes with a protective covering as well. But generally, no. If you do cut your perennials down to the ground every year, some people like to try and protect them with leaves, a nice mulch of leaves, or some branches of evergreens, that sort of thing. And the reason for doing that is actually to keep the ground frozen so you don't get that freeze-thaw going on before things are ready to start growing again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I had a hard time with my bleeding heart. At first, I tried it in the middle of my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, I thought, well, I'm just going to have to move it up next to the house. And now it has just gone wild.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been covering that up every winter. I probably don't need to, but...
You probably don't. They're pretty hardy. But if it works, it works. You know, it's just, you know, what works for you may not work for someone else, but, you know, what works is...
When I'm laying up in my cozy little bed, I just imagine that bleeding heart down there,
a little
cozy in the garden.
Yeah.
Oh, no. what are some... people often plant bulbs in the fall. Is that right?
Yeah, they do. This is a really good time for bulb planting. And I think the stores have got tulips and daffodils and all sorts of other things as well. So really good time to get out and plant some bulbs so you'll have some early spring flowers.
Do you do that? I mean, are there certain ones that...
Yeah, I do. I plant some tulips in the backyard. I'm trying not to do tulips in the front where the moose get them. Moose love tulips. But they won't eat daffodils, and they don't seem to eat the crocus either, as far as I can tell. So any place where you have any moose traffic, you probably want to put the daffodils in and not tempt them with the tulips.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that last winter... We have a huge willow in our backyard. Mm-hmm. It's just huge. Mm-hmm. And a moose had a really big picnic on that thing for a couple of days and just chewed around the whole thing. And this year it did okay, but where it got chewed on, it's just grown out these hundreds of branches.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been like, it's been almost invading my whole backyard and causing a lot of screening and darkening issues.
Willows will do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they will.
So I really nailed it this year with the cutters. I hope I didn't do anything.
No, I don't think so. I'm sure it'll come back.
Alaska
really well.
And willows, I think they're kind of synonymous.
Yeah.
What, as far as flowers, how exotic have you gotten as
how
far
exotic
as planting flowers?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm always trying something new. I don't really have much room. In fact, I've got lots of pots that I still haven't planted yet. But it always seems like there's something new, or you're finding a new variety that's hardy up here and everybody wants to have it. And, you know, or in travels, you see something that you just have to have. So, what's the most exotic thing I have? I don't know.
Jeff always swears his favorite plant is Ligularia.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think he was probably responsible for bringing Ligularia up here, or at least introducing it. I guess the poppies, the blue poppies, really do well, and I do enjoy seeing them. And this year I'm adding some Astrantia, which is a new plant for me, and so I'm hoping that it will overwinter and will do really well. I saw that last year and I had to have it, so we'll see how that does.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, you know, one of the things that I'm really becoming very fond of is sedums and saxifragas and the plants that have they're kind of late blooming and low growing, but they also have very fleshy leaves on them. So they're kind of like the cactus of the north, I guess you can think of it that way. And I've been introducing a lot more of them into the garden as well. I think they're really considered more of a rock garden plant.
Mm-hmm. Which we didn't even touch on. We'll have to do that.
Well, yeah. Have a show on rock gardens next year.
Yeah. What about Alaskan wildflowers? Do you keep any of those in your garden?
I do. I have, what do I have? I have a native white geranium, and I have chocolate lilies, which are really pretty, but man, do they stink in the spring when they're growing. And I'll walk around, I'm like, what's that smell?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. For such a nicely named plant,
chocolate lilies.
You
would think it would smell sweet, but it sure does not.
This last year, I got a white fireweed and grew that this year. And I've kept a few fireweed, you know, because I have... of course, the irises.
I have lots of iris too.
Bluebells, the coastal bluebells, and but I'm always struggling with my forget-me-nots. Mm. Is that like they bloom?
Struggling as in you, they're taking over or
they don't
grow?
They don't bloom very
really?
Well for
oh,
me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that's another thing I took out of my garden last year. I took the forget-me-nots out because they were taking over and seeding everywhere, and I put in the saxifragas and the sedums.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't know why. Maybe I just need to try a different location or
it could be.
Something. But
yeah, I don't know.
At least we didn't have to do too much watering this year.
Yeah.
Okay, I got another email here. You brought up Treerific. The Anchorage Treerific program next Wednesday night features Mel Monson, a wonderful gardener who will talk about growing fruit trees.
Great, there you go.
So regarding bristle cone pines, a characteristic of this tree is the needles are covered by tiny white resin dots.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Interesting. People often mistake them for a pest. This is not a characteristic of lodgepole pine and may indicate a pest. Great show, Patricia.
So, this must be Patricia Joyner, who yep. is a forester. She's,
yes.
She knows everything about trees.
And she
wonderful resource, yeah.
is at www.dnr.state.ak.us/forestry/community. But I bet if you Googled Patricia Joyner, pop up there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. And I'm wondering if I have her on my resource. I probably don't, but I should add her.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what do you look for in your blog? What do you like to hear from people?
Well, I would just like to hear from people because the blog really is supposed to be interactive and community. It's out there for the community. And you can comment. You can add comments or questions at the end of each blog. And I really look forward to hearing from people that might have something to say or to add to any of the blog posts. I really invite people to join into the conversation as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding people are kind of shy. I don't know if that's gardeners are shy or what, but
well, they're not shy here. What about indoor houseplants? Do you specialize in any of those or?
I don't say I specialize. I enjoy growing African violets, and I also have orchids and also Streptocarpus, which is also
I have those.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, and I love those. Those are really, really fun to grow.
Yeah, I didn't really like them until I started noticing the sale they'd have around Mother's Day here.
Mm, oh, that's right, the African Violet Society. And you know what I found out is that they aren't going to do it anymore.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, so maybe they need to know that we love it and we want them to continue.
Yeah, I look forward to it,
yeah,
to going here. Even when my rheumatoid arthritis was really bad, one of my friends dragged me out there and said, we're going there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thanks for joining in the show today, Fran. Really great to have you here as
pleasure.
A guest.
It's been fun.
Fran Derner. And so give her blog a look. It's on the ADN blog, Talk Dirt to Me, and she's got all kinds of information. She's got videos on there you can look at.
That's right.
Deadheading and seed collecting. Lord of the Gourd.
that was about the man who grew the giant pumpkin at the state fair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And topiary animals. Mm-hmm. I noticed that in
the sisters
Southport,
at
they're starting
Garden.
To
oh, really?
Do topiary.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, what fun. I'll have to go look.
Yeah, in the middle of the median thing there, whatever
fun,
you call
fun.
It. Yeah. So I'm your host, Nellie Moore. Community Forum takes a week off. But be sure to join us week after next when we're back for another program here on KSKA.org. I'm your host, Nellie Moore. You have a safe week, and I'll see you later.
Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us, KSKA 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska 99508, or email us at communityforum@kska.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at ksKA.org/community forum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.